Over the past couple weeks and months, China has been identified as the site of a number of attempts at hacking both government and business information systems. Mm-hmm. And over the past couple days, there's been a report issued by Mandiant, and there's been a New York Times article. And a fair amount of buzz about kind of what does this mean, what is China doing, what does this mean for Sino-U.S. relations, is this a new kind of way of thinking about international espionage and even warfare, et cetera, et cetera. Conventional wisdom is that China, you know, we have to remain vigilant about China because they're constantly trying to get an edge. And if we let down our guard too many times, China will use the accumulation of those various kind of missed opportunities to undertake the types of actions that would be detrimental to U.S. interests. And so the assumption all along that this is policy on the part of the Chinese government, and something has to be done about it, that we have to retaliate in some sort of effective manner based on that assumption.
But one thing I at least wasn't clear on, mm-hmm. how much was already known about how much the Chinese were hacking and how much the role the government was playing?
It's hard to say. I mean, it's a great question. It's hard mm-hmm. to say because there's so much that we don't know mm-hmm. about mm-hmm. what we do know, right? I think a lot of this stuff will not be surprising to people who are really on the front lines mm-hmm. of trying to get this information. But, of course, that information itself is highly classified. One of the things that that's really interesting about this Mandiant report is that it goes into pretty cloak-and-dagger-type detail mm-hmm. in terms of aerial photographs of where this unit is located, suburbs, the northeastern suburbs of Shanghai. Mm-hmm. It involves a really, really interesting cast of characters. So, for example, the online activist group Anonymous was responsible for supplying some of the identities or some of the connections that made it possible to identify some of the hackers, in this military unit. So it's really, it's a very kind of Argo-like, it's made to be a movie. But I think, coming back to your question, this is something that if we didn't know a fair amount of this, at some levels of our intelligence network, then we're not undertaking, our intelligence the way we should. And I think the flip side of that is we should not really be surprised that any other country, including, in some cases, especially China, would be engaged in the type of behavior designed to give itself some sort of an edge, right? I mean, any country is going to develop its own kind of offensive, defensive capabilities. China, there's no way China can compete with the types of weapon systems that we have. But if you can dismantle them in ways like this, then, and of course the U.S., is not blameless in all of this as well. I forgot the name of the actual worm that we kind of deposited in the Iranian case, but we delayed a development of, I think, Iranian centrifuge capabilities for a year and a half by mm-hmm. introducing this single worm. So, this is something that we're all involved in. Mm-hmm. What's really interesting in this case, and I think the media and everybody have missed the big story, and the big story is, well, before I say what the big story is, let me take a step back. I said that the assumption here is that this is policy, government policy on the part of China. China has said the government has nothing to do with this, to which I would say they're actually technically accurate. I think the government had nothing to do with this. This originated within ranks of the military. And in China, the military does not report to the government. it reports to the party. So, like I said, technically, you know, if you put that spokesperson, I forget who it was, you know, give them a polygraph test, that means two things. First of all, the place to look is in the military, which is one thing, and I'll talk about what that actually means in just a moment. But the other thing is that this is not, I do not think that this is policy, this is government policy. It makes no sense for it to be government policy. Now let me talk about what it is. Developing the capacity to do this, very much policy. Actually doing it, not policy. And here's why. It serves no interests at all to do this. I mean, the U.S. response to this is exactly what anybody would expect it to be. It's something that, on the Chinese side, it's basically they're showing their hand, right? They're showing what they're capable of doing. By engaging this type of behavior, what they have done is they've mobilized not just the intelligence community in the United States, because they were already on the job, but like I said, these other actors, Anonymous and other security companies, private security companies, and all sorts of other netizens to find out what's going on. And so the report, you know, I've read countless reports on, you know, various phenomena within China. This one is, in my view, by far, you know, one of the most kind of robust in terms of the types of information. You know, and this is the type of information that you would never, ever be expected to be able to come across unless, you know, you had, you know, incriminating photographs of, you know, some of the top leaders over there. So this is not, you know, this is an embarrassment to Beijing. It's one that, in which it doesn't look good. It's some of its, you know, family jewels, you know, have been exposed. And so that raises the question, if that's true, you know, if you buy that argument, right, then the question is, then why did it happen? If it's not in Beijing's interest, you know, if it's not in China's interest, why did it happen? The answer is there's no one China. China is made up of all sorts of bureaucracies, political, organizational, institutional, regional interests that are constantly competing with one another. It's really like herding cats for the top leader. I mean, that's really what they spend 90% of their time doing. And so where this really becomes interesting is if you apply that to what's going on here, then it starts to make an awful lot of sense. You've got a leadership transition that's unfolding in real time right now, number one. Number two, you have the military that's kind of jockeying for, you know, some sort of extra, you know, they see an opportunity to jockey for a little bit of extra, you know, more budget, more authority, more representation on the Politburo Standing Committee, you know, what have you. And the last transition you had 10 years ago of a kind of a full kind of leadership group to the top, the one place where it was kind of sticky was on giving up the military portfolio. Jiang Zemin, that was the last thing that he did, and he didn't want to do it, and an otherwise seamless, relatively seamless transition was marred by that one thing. So my interpretation of what's going on here is that the military sees an opportunity to embarrass and essentially blackmail Beijing into getting a little extra, and it's doing it, in this case, by kind of moving forward with kind of going beyond their parameters, their boundaries, in terms of not only learning how to do all of this, but actually engaging in it. Mm-hmm. And there are plenty of other opportunities in recent years of the military kind of breaking ranks, if you will, and embarrassing Beijing. So there was the incident in 2011 when they had the J-20 stealth fighter test right when our Secretary of Defense was meeting with Hu Jintao, and Gates asked who, what's going on here? And Hu was like, well, what do you mean what's going on here? What? He had no idea that this was going on. People who have spoken to senior Chinese leaders said, well, that was a bit of a, you know, things were a little bit disorganized. And the Chinese response was, no, they weren't just disorganized. We had no idea what was going on. So that would be one example of it. The year before that, Chinese fishing vessels attack on the Japanese Coast Guard vessel. Those weren't military, you know, those weren't military boats, but they were certainly in areas under Chinese military jurisdiction. So, you know, they wouldn't do this if there wasn't some sort of agreement, tacit or otherwise, with the military. Again, these are local military units. And then there's also the case of the USS Impeccable back in 2009, where you had the harassment by the Chinese Navy of this U.S. Spy ship, if you will, that was there monitoring Chinese submarine movements. So you know, this is if you look at it in terms of kind of cybersecurity, then you can't really put it into context. If you see it in terms of the military kind of punching above its weight, if you will, then it actually fits a pattern quite nicely going back at least 4 years and possibly more.
I guess one question that's come to my mind just listening to you describe some of these things is, does the U.S. have this sort of understanding of China, like the U.S. Government officials, like to understand that this might not be like an actual like policy under the actual government? It's more under the military control?
Yeah, so, I mean, it's a great question, and it's one that I would have answered differently 15 or 20 years ago. So when I was first interviewing people in the government here, I was really actually pretty unimpressed, really, to the extent to which they didn't get some of the, I think, more fundamental truths about understanding Chinese behavior. I have to say that starting in the, well, in Clinton's second term, things started to move forward in terms of Clinton's first term in terms of U.S.-China relations was a fiasco. The second one was one of learning from mistakes. And after a couple of missteps early on in the first term of the Bush administration, certainly by the second term, the things that they put into place in terms of Sino-U.S. relations, institutions and other types of mechanisms that they put in place were actually quite effective and I would say quite wise. The incoming Obama administration during his first term, to their credit, continued a number of those institutions. So when I go and I meet with people, say, in defense, or I meet with people in state, or I meet with people in commerce, now, I'm actually pretty impressed by, you know, how much they get it. One of the other things that not just staffers, but the actual leaders here do is they take many, many, many trips to China. And the cumulative effect of these types of trips are to build confidence. In addition to building confidence, of course, what's happening is they're learning more about what's going on because you're talking to more people and you're getting a sense of stuff. So, you know, one part of answering that question is, I would venture they have a pretty good idea of what's going on. Here's where it gets complicated. It gets complicated in at least two ways. The first is you've got any number of other interpretations of what's going on, right? So it's not just me, you know, it's like, oh, Murtha's got it. Okay, well, does the government know what Murtha, you know? Right? So there's a lot of different ways of interpreting a particular set of events, even without bringing politics into it. Now I'm going to bring politics into it, and that's the second complicating and confounding factor here, because this is something you probably do not recall, because this was I think you were quite young when this was happening. But in the early 1990s, actually throughout most of the 1990s, ways. Sino-U.S. relations were one of intense acrimony over mostly trade issues, although not exclusively. And the relationship, one of the reasons why this relationship was so abused by various interests on all sides was because in the case of China, it made a really, really big target for a lot of groups within the United States. So let's say you've got industry associations. China was the site of a lot of manufacturing, still is. There were a lot of countries where manufacturing just became too expensive. Korea, Southeast Asia, certainly Japan, Taiwan. They moved to China. As a result, you have much more manufacturing going on in China, and you have a transfer of the trade deficit from a group of countries, including China, to largely China. And the result of that was that it made China's trade deficit with the United, or trade surplus with the United States, seem even more dramatic. Because now it all belonged to China as opposed to these other countries that, just a year or two before, we divide up our trade deficit with them. Mm-hmm. So that was one thing. The other thing, intellectual property was a huge issue at the time. You had intellectual property trade associations just beating down the door to the United States Trade Representative's office and to the Department of Commerce. Mm-hmm. And that was another thing that just kept on fueling the... But then you had... Politics make strange bedfellows, and you had Christian groups that were outraged at the godlessness in China, and things like the one-child policy, which was forced abortion, right? I mean, that's something that... And then you also had human rights groups, left-leaning human rights groups, allying with the Christian right because of the human rights aspect of... the one-child policy. So all of these interests that had China as basically their target, because first of all, a lot of these things were going on. But the other thing, politically, China provided the poster child for whatever cause they were trying to pursue. And so at the time, what you had, it was impossible to do anything bold, anything visionary, anything with, because people who were involved in the Clinton administration in the second term, they told me that 95% of our time and effort is spent putting out these types of fires. We've got 5% of our time being able to, cast some kind of bold policy direction or something like this. So that's one of the reasons why stuff is so incremental. Now, the good news is China, one of the things that 9/11 did in the United States was change the principal existential enemy of the U.S. from what had been the Soviet Union and then in the 90s became China, then became radical Islamic terrorist groups. And so all of a sudden, China was out of the spotlight, out of that negative spotlight, if you will. And as a result, you don't have as much of a political... The relationship is not as fraught with politics as it had been in the past. And that's a good thing. And that's one of the things that allows us to make more of the right types of decisions than more of the wrong types of decisions. So it's a great question. I think we're in a better footing now than, and one of the things that neither China nor any administration wants, as distinct from, say, Congress, that any administration wants is for things to get in the way of being able to shepherd that relationship, which is another reason why there's no reason, this serves Beijing's purposes in no way, shape, or form.
So with that in mind, what do you think will happen next, either from... what will Beijing say, or what?
Yeah, what will happen? How do the new leadership respond to this? Yes. Do they outright acknowledge it? Is it more just all right, this happened separate from us. Mm-hmm.
If the past is any guide, I think what's going to happen is it's largely going to blow over. It will maintain, it'll now become a bullet point for kind of all future negotiations into the near future. In terms of Sino-U.S. cooperation, I think it'll light a fire under us in terms of kind of upgrading our ability to protect these types of. I would bet both mortgages that I currently hold that China will not admit to this and apologize for this. That's not the way they roll. But what would be interesting is to see, and this is unfortunately something that we would have to kind of wait some time to see, the degree to which you have some kind of internal kind of cleaning of the ranks, you know, among the military. Because I've been arguing that this is, you know, the military embarrassing Beijing. This doesn't strike me as being a very smart way of getting what you want. You want to lead up to the precipice without going over, and they went over. So it'll be interesting to see, again, assuming that my interpretation is accurate here, I would imagine that we'll see some cleansing of the ranks within the military. You would anyway with a new leadership, but I would imagine you would see this or are aware of it in the medium, short to medium term, less sanguine, but I would not be surprised, and I would certainly expect this type of house cleaning to go forward in China.